decent heat source in the basement. So, but hey, man, it's been many years. I'm licensed over 50 years, and I know you're licensed even longer. So, you know, it's been it's been a long time, hasn't it, Dick? Anyway, one question, two parts. I recently got on computer here because all my friends on 80 meters, they didn't want to talk to me anymore unless I got with it, you know. So I did, and anyway, I got a cell phone, pay-as-you-go cell phone, and I got a summer place up in the Catskill Mountains, and it's rather sparse up there, you know, for cell phone towers, and I have to walk next to the road in order to get a call through, and if it rains, there ain't no signal at all. And I want to make I found the design equations on the internet. I want to make a circular horn antenna. And I'm a little amazed with the can that I have here, how much gain it's supposed to be. It's hard to believe. And then the other antenna I want to make is a Wi-Fi antenna, a collinear vertical. I guess it's because I want omnidirectional coverage. So that's my input to you there. A circular horn and a omnidirectional collinear vertical for Wi-Fi, unless you can suggest something easy and but better to build. I don't know. Back to you, Dick. WB2 Charlie Lima, November. Over.
Tom, I'm going to backstep three subjects. I'm going to go back to 2 meters. If you hung a coat hanger ground plane antenna, an SO239 with four pieces of coat hanger as the counterpoise and one in the center as the radiator, and you hung that on a piece of string from one of the upper rooms of your house, and you ran a piece of RG58 cable down to your handy turkey, you would be gangbusters into the repeater, unless you happen to be behind a really big building or a really big hill. You're so darn close to this repeater input, you would bomb. And just because it's a handy talkie and a small object, and you think you're not going to have good coverage to the repeater, you're in the backyard of this repeater. So don't give up so easily. You create the right kind of antenna connection, and you will be gangbusters on and this repeater in RF, and you'll have a huge advantage over Echolink. Echolink is great if you're out of town and you want to get back to that town. You're in town, so to use Echolink, in my opinion, is putting you at a disadvantage. The second subject is you're talking about horns and omnidirectionals and whatever, and you haven't told me what frequency. If you were building a horn for 1296 megacycles versus building a horn for 10 gigs, huge difference. If you don't pin that down, nobody can talk to you about it. Back to you, Tom. K2RIW.
Dick, don't forget that you can type your call sign in. Type the word break, and it will announce your call sign. That's one way to be heard.
Yeah, but let's see if Chris, KB2IQN, is there a way that you have the ability, Chris, to type in your call letters and break in by way of the slight disadvantages you have with a Linux system? And what you've got to use to be compatible with Echolink. I don't know if that capability is there. KB2IQN, K2RIW.
Type the word break in the text screen.
Let's see if that works. Over to you, Chris.
Oh, I am going to give that a try. But I was going to say exactly the same thing that Eric just did, which is that's an Echolink function at the repeater side. So it doesn't make it shouldn't make any difference whether on the client side, it's Echolink or Qtel, but I'm going to give that a try now. KB2IQN.
KB2IQN.
like a charm. And you, that automatic voice announced your call letters, Chris.
Roger that. Cool.
In fact, I think you're listening with a handy talkie also, Chris. And did you hear that? Did you hear those call letters come out of the handy talkie?
I am not listening with the handy talkie because there is a quarter second delay between the handy talkie and the output of Echolink, and it becomes more of a distraction to try to listen to both than a benefit.
I understand. Even if you had earphones, when you hear that delay, it can really create some stuttering. Hey, Tom, I've got a great...
Chris there, there's another station I'm logged in here, Lou, NY2H. I thought I made it clear to you there, Dick, but the circular horn I want to use for 1900 megahertz, 1900, which is the cell phone.
Hey, Dick, when are you going to buy a house?
1900 megahertz, and Wi-Fi is, of course, 2400 megahertz. Go ahead.
Okay, somebody just broke in and say, Dick, when are you going to buy a blank? Who was that? What was the question?
Katie 2 AOC, Dennis, I was just saying, when are you going to buy a pellet stove?
When am I going to buy a pellet stove? I vaguely remember that subject was discussed one or two tech nets ago. Right now I can't figure it out. Go ahead, Dennis.
No, I just, I'm the person who has the pellet stove in the house, and just doing it. Doing a 2,000 square foot home with just one pellet stove. So I was just wondering when you were going to do it because you seemed like you were thinking it was sort of like a wood stove. That's not over.
Dennis, there's an awful lot of noise on your audio. Any idea where that's coming from?
No, that's unusual. Thanks for informing me.
There's kind of a buzzing noise in the background. It's not 60 cycle or 120 cycle. There's a noise in the background almost as loud as your voice. Have you ever heard yourself with that particular rig you're using now coming through the repeater? Back to you, Dennis.
No, actually not, but my wife is using the garbage disposal, so maybe that's what it is.
Now, how close are you to that garbage disposal? And I guess when you make another transmission, when it stops, we'll find out if the noise goes away. What's your guess as to how long the garbage disposal will be running?
It's about 20 feet, and the noise stopped. How's the transmission?
Noise is still there. So I think the noise is on that rig. What is that rig, and what is the power supply for it, Dennis?
County Eastern Link.
It's a Kenwood 731A mobile device, Kenwood, and it's 50 watts output.
Is that something that's happening from the Eastern Link, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LAW?
That's what I'm trying to find out, because it could actually generate that if there's not a good connection on one of the audio cables.
Let me jump in on 375, there's NY2H, and you can check it against mine, all right?
You sound clean, NY2H, so I don't think it's a repeater.
I didn't move over yet. Let me move over now and try it. I'm on 85, hold on.
Dodger Lou.
All righty, NY2H on 375. Okay, check it out. What'd you hear?
You're clean, Lou. No, you're clean. So, I'm beginning to think that Dennis has that noise on his transmitter. The 731, you said you're running 50 watts, and you were, could you run a lower amount of power? Some rigs will put out a lot of noise at the high power mode and not. So, Dennis, can you go to a lower power on that rig?
I'd be getting RF back in the audio.
Yes, I can go to a lower wattage, but when I've used the lower wattage, it sounded like I was far away, but I'll switch over right now.
Stand by.
KD2 AOC, KD2 AOC. How do you read this?
Yeah, at the lower power, you've now got some scratchies because of the carrier being weaker into the repeater, but the noise on your audio is still there. So go back to the high power, and by some means, you're going to have to find out what's making that noise into your audio. And Eric, you think the RF is being fed back. I'm having a little trouble with that. In the case of sideband, yeah, without a doubt. In the case of FM, RF getting in the audio, would it make a sound like that? KE2EJ, KE2RAW.
Yeah, high power, I've heard that happen. I mean, you can probably give it some of it, the power supply. I'm not being able to produce enough current. But the fact that it's FM is sort of irrelevant in a sense, because when you've got a feedback kind of thing going, if you actually look on a scope, you see an amplitude component to it, and that's what gets rectified.
Okay. Dennis, you've been using that rig for how long? Has anyone else told you about that noise? You've been using that rig in this form for how long? Back to you, Dennis.
I've been using it ever since the beginning in this form, but the power supply has been running a little bit warmer than usual, so maybe it is the power supply over.
Yeah, sure would be nice if you had some other method of powering that rig, if you had a second power supply. The fact that it's running hotter is a clue, and it's a moderate amount of noise. A lot of people are going to complain. We can still hear your audio, but I would guess the noise we're talking about is only a few dB weaker than your voice, Dennis.
I could probably switch over to a battery, directly and circumvent the power supply. Over.
Out of curiosity, how long will it take you to do that?
Probably about 10 minutes.
Okay. Don't know if I'll be here during that time, because my family wants me to eat a couple of bites before the TechNet begins. Okay. I'm going to have to go away, you guys. I'll be back a little later. K2RAW, to be clear, but listening. Oh, is there another experiment you want to do, Chris? And by the way, Eric, I got a puzzle for you. Guess how much DX there is between KB2IQN and K2RAW. What do you guess is the distance between those two guys right now?
I have no idea where IQN is.
Okay, he's my harmonic, and he's about 30 feet away from me in another room of the house where the computer is, and I'm in the ham shack. Real DX. Over to you, Eric.
No, that ain't 30 feet away.
Well, 30 feet, and we're talking to each other by way of a repeater that's 19.5 miles away from the house, so it's a, let's see, 39 mile an hour round trip in order to cover 30 feet. So, Chris, I guess that's the first time you've ever used the break-in function. Looks like it works. Anything else you want to test, Chris? KB2IQN, K2LAW?
Oh, he's on FLAG, and let's see. It's not going to be just a round trip. It's going to be through the network, which could go anywhere.
So you're saying the node might be up in New England. He's going up to New England, back down to Glen Oaks, and then out. Is that what you're saying, Eric?
So I'm going to guess that you use Cablevision for your ISP. Is that true?
Let's let Chris answer that one.
It's not completely clear where Echolink is connecting to. It's not always easy to know what the first node being connected to is, because you can sometimes connect through a proxy. And unfortunately, QTEL is not giving me that information, so I can't tell you whether I'm connected directly to the node or not. I think I might be directly connected to W2VL-R. But no, I don't think there's anything else I want to test right now. I think I'm happy enough with the testing we've got, so I just know that it works, and that's what I need. So thank you very much. KB2IQN listening.
Before you go, where did you get the client program, or did you write it yourself?
The QTEL is part of a program called SVX Link, and it's on SourceForge. But it is tricky to compile. There's no Debian package for it, or if there is one, it's old. And I'm trying to make a new Debian package for it. Okay?
Very cool. Very cool. Actually, I'm not in front of my computer right now, but I could probably tell you the path that you're making it into. Assuming you're using Cablevision, you go into one of their nodes first, or the cluster where you start, you know. It'll probably exit out and go into, what the heck is the name of the carrier they use. And you're going to wind up going into the city before you actually get to, because you're going to be going into New York through Time Warner, where they make the handoff, and Time Warner is going to send it back to another node, and then that'll eventually wind up at Glen Oaks. You're probably doing three or four hops, but you are connected directly to W2VL, and I'm going to, if you do come up with a new package, just ship it to me, and I'll distribute it. Because there's a lot of guys that would like to have it.
Hey, Chris, I might mention to you that you got very clean-sounding audio. Many guys that were on Echo Link the first time, the audio is quite often heavily distorted, too high, too low, too bassy. I've never heard it too squeaky. Right now, the audio you're giving me is such that I could easily be confused into thinking you've got a good RF transmitter going through the repeater. I know that when you were listening to the feedback into the handy-talkie, you were only hearing like a quarter of a second of a delay, which amazingly that it's that small. I think once you go through the internet, quite often the latency is much bigger. KB2IQN, K2LAW.
Roger that, KB2IQN. Well, I happen to use Mumble very often, as you know, for doing voice over IP work to talk to friends over a private Mumble server. So that's the way in which I actually test my own audio. And Mumble has a loopback feature where you can connect through the server and hear your own voice. So that's the way in which I actually test my own audio level. Back to you.
That's working out very well. Tom, I think you said you did look at the computer printout, and you found out that Lou had signed in, Chris had signed in. By way of you looking at that computer printout, Tom, were you able to find out how Chris is linking? Does it give you that information? WB2CLN, K2LIW.
What was the question there, Dick? I guess we doubled a little bit. He's a little bassy. I hope I'm all right. I think I am. I'm on a laptop here, but he is a little bassy.
Okay. You were looking at your laptop. You knew that KB2IQN had signed in, Chris. You knew that the NY2H had signed in. Is your computer printout not only telling you how many people are on Echo Link right now, but is it telling you how they are linking? Can you find out by what means is Christopher, what nodes is he going through, if you know what I mean? Back to you, Tom, K2IW.
Yeah, but I don't know if I can do it. Look, I got on a computer recently here, so... but I can tell you who else has logged in here. 8R1 Bravo, that's Julian. Alpha Charlie 2, GS, George, Sierra Roy, and KB2, GLI, Steve, go ahead.
Okay, so there are a number of people signed in, and I guess they're getting ready for the TechNet. Okay, I'm going to go away for a little while. I'll see you guys in about 10 minutes. K2RI, you'll be clear and listening.
Consider me there for the first questions that I gave you there about two antennas there. See you in a little while there, Dick. WB2CLN.
KD2AOC, how's this transmission sound?
Oh, you got a little buzz or hum, maybe a little bit of both. You're understandable. but I'm hearing something there. Go ahead.
I'm starting to get the feeling this is coming through to repeat it. KD2AOC.
There's some kind of hum on that.
I don't think something that loud would be coming through the repeater or based on the repeater itself. I don't think so. If you hear a little hum from me, well, I know what it is. I don't think you're seeing it, but I'm using my headphone jack that goes to a goes to an FM transmitter, and that's being transmitted to my boombox. A makeshift arrangement until I buy some amplified speakers. Over.
If it works, go with it. KD2AOC.
Dennis, that noise on your transceiver, that's new. I've never heard it before, and I don't think it's coming from the repeater. KC2WGB.
Hi, John. Yeah, I switched over to battery supply. I bypassed the power supply, and that's why I'm surprised it's still coming through.
The nature of the noise is a bit different, but it's there.
Well, it almost sounds like a big ground on your microphone. Is that possible?
John, how am I coming out into Intuition?
Go ahead, Wesley.
Are you okay?
Phone, that's what it sounds like.
Eric, am I okay?
Yeah, you're fine, Wesley. You're a little bit loud, but you're fine. Lou, you still there on Y2H, K2J? No, I guess not. All right, you guys carry on, K2J.
John, are you still there? I'm talking to you.
I'm going to stick that tonight until I sort this out. Good thing I bought a new rig today. It's not any good for 2 meter, but it's good for the world.
Once again, is it possible you got a big ground on your microphone? That's what it sounds like.
I'm going to try disconnecting, and I'll reconnect and see if that helps. Over.
Whiskey Bravo, Julie, Charlie Whiskey.
You think Julian's trying to get in? I'm not sure. You're saying you called by too fast. 8R1 Bravo, go ahead. He just logged out.
Okay, I've disconnected and reconnected my mic. Is this any better? Over.
Didn't make any difference at all, negative. Are you near any, do you have near any electromagnetic field by chance?
Actually, I am, but I've been
You cut out, you said you are, and then you cut out, so that can be it, some kind of electromagnetic field you're too close to.
Is the new radio? I took you.
KD2CXK.
There's a whole bunch of stations now on EchoLink. so it should be quite an evening. Go ahead.
Oh, Roger, I got a question. I don't know who else is listening, but I'm trying to find out where I can scrounge IC storage tubes. I need a whole bunch of them, and I've bought some, but they're too expensive to buy. And I figured it must be some manufacturing plants on Long Island that are using up ICs and throwing the tubes away.
Now, I don't know. I don't know what the heck you want them for. You know, you want to buy plastic tubes. On the internet, I'm sure they're pretty cheap, but I couldn't tell you offhand.
I've got a collection of ICs. I've got about 20,000 ICs, and let's see, what was the last count? I got a lot of them.
Well, are you a hoarder, or do you want to sell? Maybe you should try to sell at Limart.
I eventually am going to sell them, but I've...
He's a heathen.
Pile.
Well, let's see, plastic tubes. I'm thinking, other than ICs, where you can find plastic tubes if you're not on the internet, go to a pharmacy and tell them you want to buy some, I think they have clear plastic tubes from a pharmacy. Go ahead.
What I'm looking for is what integrated circuits are packed in when, like, companies buy them in bulk. They come in these plastic tubes about 23 inches long. You know, to hold the ICs, that they're anti-static. I've got about 100 pounds of ICs in boxes that I've got to sort out, and I've got another couple of thousand in small cardboard boxes over here that are somewhat sorted out, but I want to put them all in those plastic tubes before I offer them for sale.
Oh, so you want something really long. I don't know. I don't know. But, hey, just sell them to Dick. I'm sure Dick's still using integrated circuits. Sell it to Dick.
All right. Because, let's see, I'm looking at my spreadsheet. Last count on the ICs, because they got cold and I gave up on them back in October, I had 14,383 counted, and I have 11,125 transistors and diodes.
That's a pretty damn good parts bin. Wow. Dick, if he's interested in ICs, I'm sure he's still building a K2RIW. He'll be back in a few minutes.
Yeah, okay, I'll pass it by. I just wanted to get them, you know, sorted out so I know exactly what I've got. You know, I was hoping to sell the whole lot in bulk, you know. I've got also all kinds of other stuff. I got, like, rheostats, I got relays, I've got... all kinds of voltage-regulated chips. I've got it just scares the stuff. I got these little micro-miniature relays. They go for $30 a piece, and I've got at least 30. I think I got about 30 of them.
How much mold do you have on them?
That?
How much mold buildup do you have on them?
None. What happened was there was a maintenance facility that was discontinued, and they threw everything away, and I was standing strategically in the dumpster when it was deposited.
Sound like you got a lot of stuff. I could use, if the price is right, I could use, I can keep some in stock. Let's say 100 of the three terminal IC regulators, linear, not switching, linear, 15 volt, 1 amp, you know, the three terminals, fixed regulator, but they have to be identical. Whoever the manufacturer is, it has to be identical. Go ahead.
Take that time, 8 o'clock. For Christ's sakes.
Net time.
So you got 100 of those?
I'm checking. Hold on.
Guys will have to stand down. It's time for the net. KC2WGB.
Far away. I don't know. I live in Flushing.
Please stand by on the net. And to exceed.
The net could start momentarily.
Hey, but to answer your, this is WB12CW. To answer your question, let's see, on my inventory, I got 15, but I only got 52 pieces.
You said you got 50 pieces? Well, 50's all right, but they have to be identical, you know. Well, what the hell is the number there? 7815, you know, that's one of the numbers, but they all have to be identical, the same manufacturer.
Gentlemen, you're going to have to stand down. The net has to start. KC2WGB.
Dick, K2RIW, WB2CLN.
Yeah, I was called away. Just joined you guys again. WB2CLN is already signed in. Don't worry, Tom. This is the TechNet. TechNet number 4134 of the series of TechNets that began way back in September of 1982. John, KC2WGB, and Dick, K2RIW. Try to run this thing. We try to organize it. Sometimes these very enthusiastic guys jump on top of each other. We do recommend that you wait for all four beeps and then wait one or two more seconds beyond that so that the people out of the area on Echolink don't get timed out, don't get excluded. Main purpose of the technical end, let me drop. You guys have heard me say it thousands of times before. The main purpose of the technical net is that amateurs gather Sunday evening and we teach each other. We help each other. We find out how all this hardware really works. There's a tremendous amount of brain power in the tri-state area of northern New Jersey, southern New York, western Connecticut, Long Island, and this TechNet, plus the people who sign in by Echolink. So a little bit of worldwide smarts is in there too. So we try to tap into that brain power. What John and I promise, well, we make a sincere effort that for those who sign in the beginning by giving us their call letters, their name, try to remember to give me your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. After 30 years, this TechNet has existed for 30 years. By now, we assume that people are listening, so we don't need long lists of people signing in saying, I'm here and I'm listening. We sort of know that. So we're looking for the sign-ins of the people who really do have a question or a comment. And so John and I try to make a sincere effort that during the first hour, we give people at least a brief answer to their question. And that way, we try to get through all of those names in the first hour. The usual menu here is that first hours are the brief questions and answers, particularly specializing in new hands. The next thing is that John goes to the so-called mailbag, people who have communicated to him by internet or by snail mail because they don't yet have their ham license. The main thing that this TechNet does, if we give live on the air answers. John and Dick are not promising free consulting service during the rest of the week. We do this for 4 hours on Sunday night only. and we do it in live audio. And so for the guys who don't yet have a ham license, they got no good way of checking in, so to speak. And so by way of that mailbag, John will go through 2, 3, or 4 of those questions. That's followed by Paul, WS2N, who is our space expert. He'll tell us what National Aeronautics and Space Administration has been doing in the last week. And NASA is doing some great things. This coming Tuesday, a great launch is going to take place for the HADRIS Tracking Data Relay Satellite. And if you don't know what that is, it's one hell of a piece of hardware, which really does great things for their particular operation. It gives them tremendous advantage when it comes to worldwide communication to their individual space probes, spacecraft, International Space Station, the works, the Hubble Space Telescope. When you're looking at those pictures from the Hubble Space Telescope, I think 99.9% of those pictures have flowed through a TDRS satellite. Okay, one other thing that's going to happen tonight, let me drop. And that is after that first hour of the brief questions and answers, followed by the mailbag, followed by NASA Select, Paul with his NASA report, after that we go into the deeper subjects. I happen to have tonight some good information to give you guys. You've probably been hearing for some time this theory of mine with reference to the number of people, 100 and some odd people, supposedly drowned during Hurricane Sandy. I'm led to believe the vast majority of those people were not drowning. They are electrocutions. That's my belief. I've made some measurements that seem to give significant contribution to that, confirmation of that particular hypothesis. Another thing I did, another one of my hobby horses, is to say that Percy Spencer, the man who is accredited with inventing the microwave oven, he supposedly discovered that microwaves do heating of food because of the melting of a chocolate bar that was in his pocket. Good sounding, common sense kind of an answer. I think it's an urban legend. I've made some measurements along those lines, and you'll find what my evidence is that seems to say that that may not be true. Other than that, we go into deeper subjects beyond the first hour and a half, so to speak, where we dig deeper into how does an antenna really work? What does a radio wave really look like in space? And I've got some opinions on that one. And if Glenn KC2QIQ is around, I'll be asking him a series of specific questions, because it is my belief that what we call a radio wave, the real magic of it, is not electromagnetic. I think it's primarily magnetic. I mean, the magnetic function is what's really doing all the work. And I've done some thought experiments and a couple of experiments that sort of confirm that one. Okay, that gives you the menu for tonight. So at this time, we take check-ins from people who do have a...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
And what I just did is one of the things you're not supposed to be doing. In other words, we have to give an interruption every minute or so to make sure the machine does repeat, does reset, and wait for the 4 beeps, and then 1 second or so beyond, so that our Canadian friends and others out of the area get a chance to not get locked out. So we're going to take check-ins at this time. Give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. K2RIW, we're listening.
This is N2EO. Dick just wanted to let everybody know I'm back from North Shore University Hospital for the second time, and I'm home and I'm upstairs with an HT. Back to the...
Very fine, Rich. And lots of people were a little worried about you. And by way of Eric giving us a brand new duplexing filter where the repeater has a little bit more sensitivity, you sound good with your upstairs handy-talky. In the past, you were sometimes quite noisy. So glad to hear from you, Rich. Okay, anyone else to check in? Give me your call letters and name at this time, K2RAW.
AD2BHY, Jim and yes.
We got you, Jim. Anyone else?
N2NYW, name here is Ed, Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn.
N2NYW. Ed, you're checking in because you do have a question or a comment. Is that true, Ed?
WB2COI.
Yeah, we've already got you, Tom. Not to worry. Ed, N2, NYW, I think it's November Yankee Whiskey. Ed, you didn't say the word yes. Are you checking in because you do have a question or a comment? Back to you, Ed.
No, I just had the radio on, I heard you, and I'm just checking in. Wave the hand there. We'll be listening.
Okay, very fine. Glad to know that, Ed. That means I don't put you on the list of people that we have to go back to for questions and answers. Anyone else to check in to the TechNet, because you do have a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name right now.
KB2 GLI, Steve, yes?
KB2 GLI, Golf Lima, India. Okay, we got you, Steve. I think that makes you, you're number three on the list. Number three on the runway. One last call. Anyone else to check into the TechNet, because you do have a question or a comment, please give me your call letters and name right now. K2LIW and the TechNet listening.
WS2N. What is the space report? Not a big one, but we'll be here. Back to you, Dick.
VDN, yes.
Oh, we got you, Paul. VDN, you said it very quickly. Give me the full set of calls. Is it Victor, Delta, November? Give me the full set of calls, sir, and your name.
Victor, Bravo, November, Freddie in Far Rockaway, yes.
Okay, Victor, Bravo, November, Far Rockaway, and I think it's Freddie. What's the prefix to the Victor, Bravo, November? Go ahead, Freddie.
Station 2.
I think you said Kilo, Bravo 2. I got to warn you, Freddie, your signal is very noisy. You're 75% noise, 30% audio. So if you could find a better location, it would help. I think it's Kilo, Bravo 2, Victor, Bravo, November. Is that true, Freddie?
Roger.
Okay, Freddie. By the time we get to you, if there's anything you can do to make that signal a little bit stronger, it'll help. Because I'm wearing earphones and I can make you out. Most other people are gonna have trouble hearing what you're saying. You also, typical of New Yorkers, you tend to talk very fast. Those guys in Far Rockaway, they are fast talkers. You got to slow down a little bit, Freddie. One last call. Anyone else to give me your call letters and name right now, because you want to check in? Because you do have a question or comment. Give me your call letters and name right now. K2LIW.
WK2J, John. Yes.
This is K2MC, yes, but I have to disappear for about 15 minutes. If I can come back after that.
Okay, we got Whiskey Kilo 2 Juliet, that's John. Got you. And W2MC, okay. We'll call you when your name comes up, and if you're not there, we'll wait till you come back and we'll call you again. I think that's Mel, is that true?
That's right, Dick. It's Kilo 2 Mike Charlie. Now, you must have a database at your fingertips, because the last time I spoke to you, I don't recall if you'd ever spoken previous to that. You came up with my name in about 5 seconds, and about 10 minutes later, or maybe less than that, you came up with my last name, too. So I'd like to know how you manage your database.
Well, a man's got to know his limitations, Mel. And my limitation is, I never remember a name, but I always forget a face. Now, there are people who, you know, will see a face and 20 years later recognize it. I'm not one of those. On top of that, there are lots and lots of people who think they know me. I'm always running into that guy who says, you know me. And I say, yeah, where did I last meet you? Well, when you gave that talk at Packrat, and there was 100 people in the room, and it was 15 years ago, I'm the guy in the back of the room with the red hat. You remember me. I get those all the time. Okay. Tom was the first guy on our list. WB2, Charlie Lima, November. Go right ahead, Tom, with your question. I know it's going to have something to do with a 1,400 megacycle circular horn, because you gave me a little bit of a hint of that earlier. You didn't tell me what you intend to do with it. I mean, there's a zillion kinds of horns. You go to the right website, you'll find easy ways of building a horn. For instance, the W1... Why can't I think of his call letters right now? The guy who's got the online book. It'll come to me in a minute. You go to his online book, and he'll show you how to cut up a piece of sheet metal in order to make your own horn. W1 gigahertz. Whiskey 1 gigahertz. You go to Google and Google the word Whiskey 1 Golf Hotel Zulu, and you find this guy's online. charge, so to speak, very inexpensively. And now, the biggest variable is, yeah, I know what frequency, and what amount of gain do you want? You can't just say the maximum. What amount of gain do you require? What service are you trying to function with? Like, is it a downlink satellite or a weather satellite that you want to listen to?
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Depending on what satellite you want to listen to, there's usually a minimum downlink requirement, a minimum ground station requirement, a certain size antenna, a certain amount of decibels of gain, a certain noise figure at the front end is required in order to get a high enough signal-to-noise ratio in order for the system to work. So these are some of the hints you're going to have to give me, Tom. WB2CLN to take it, K2RIW in the TechNet.
All right, very good, Jake. WB2CLN, and well, I got the equations off the internet, the design equations, and I hope they're right. That's the first question. The can I'm going to be using is about 3 gallons, a 3 gallon can. It's for 1900 megahertz, 1900, the cell phone frequency. I need it for upstate because there are not many cell phone towers. I don't know. I calculated the degrees on the vertical and horizontal. Looks pretty good to me. But one thing I'm puzzled about is the length of the can. Apparently, it doesn't enter into the gain of the can. Once again, it's about a 3 gallon size can I want to use. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm getting some hints now that you give me more and more of the clues. I mean, you have to make believe, Tom, that I'm not inside your head. I don't know what you're thinking. You've got to tell me. You finally gave me a hint. It's with reference to cell phone reception in a rural area. That's a huge difference than a 1900 megacycle or a 1400 megacycle downlink of a satellite. That was my first guess with the raw data you gave me. And the 3 gallon can, my first guess is I do not recommend that approach. If you're trying to listen to cell sites, now, if you happen to know for a fact there's one and only one cell site in your area within the nearest 20 miles, let's say, and it's in a particular direction, and you want to maximize the gain of a receiving and transmitting antenna in that direction, maybe the 3 gallon can horn is an approach. But the average person doing 1900 megacycle cell phone reception, and he wants to improve the requirement that he would not improve the reception he would normally get from the cell phone itself. The cell phone's got a tiny little antenna. It's buried inside of the plastic of that radio. Let me drop it. The craziness of the American public is that they just can't get their cell phone small enough. They want it smaller and smaller and smaller. As such, the antenna is on the inside, not on the outside where it should be. The battery is small as all hell. The average cell phone user, you ask him, how many spare batteries do you carry? And he says, what's that? You ask him, during a Hurricane Irene or a Hurricane Gloria, are we going to be out of power? Do you own one of those chargers that can work from the cigarette lighter of your car? And they'll say, what's that? I mean, there's an awful lot of missing information here. We had a lot of people during Hurricane Sandy who were running around with cell phones that were out of power. They couldn't charge them. And when they finally found a way to charge it, they found that the cell site itself ran out of power because it didn't have standby power other than batteries that are only good for X number of hours. So, okay, what I'm getting at is that the average user of a 1900 meg cell phone system wants omnidirectional reception. He wants to be able to hear a signal from north, south, east, and west, because depending on the part of the day he's at, which one of those cell sites is the one that he should be using, so to speak. He can't determine that unless, as I said before, you've done a complete survey and you think you got accurate data and you know there's only one in one particular direction, you want to favor that direction. Other than that, you want omnidirectional. Let me drop. The next thing you want in order to make a 1900 meg antenna work well, I don't care if the antenna is a Cadillac or a Rolls Royce brand, I don't care if it's coated with silver or gold or platinum, I don't care if the antenna is worth $40,000, the best antenna in the world and a lousy location is going to give you lousy reception. The yuckiest antenna in the world, made out of coat hanger wire, hung high enough up that it's got a good line of sight to that particular cell site, is going to work like a charm. When it comes to VHF, UHF antennas, Tom, there are three things to make the antenna work well. Those three things are location, location, and location. You mount the antenna high enough, and if it's a yucky antenna with a good piece of coax transmission line going to it, it's going to fly like a charm. So consider that approach as opposed to the high-gain horn favoring only one particular direction. The good news about the 3-gallon can and the high-gain horn is it gives you a lot of potential gain, but it's a flashlight. How do you know how to aim that flashlight? Do you know there's only one particular cell site that's active in your area, and you're going to aim the flashlight at that particular site? I know I'm being a little severe on you here, Tom, but I'm trying to make a point, as you can tell. Please take my apology on some of the response I just gave you, Tom. WB2CLN, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, okay. Yes, there's only one cell phone site, and I don't like being next to the road in order to make a call, and when it rains, I get no signal at all. So, yes, I want a circular horn, unless you can suggest something easier to make, but this is really easy, you know that. And with that size can, it looks like a lot of gain. But the length of the can apparently doesn't enter into gain calculations from what I see. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Tom. And it's opposite of common sense. A lot of people think that a horn antenna is a little bit like a garden hose. The water flowing down the garden hose, and that comes out of a nozzle at the end usually, people believe that the garden hose has trained the water to go in one particular direction. It's now going to squirt out there and have a lot of range to it, so to speak. And they believe waveguide does that. Absolutely not. The amount of beam width you get out of a horn, the gain in the beam width, is only a function of how big is the mouth of the horn. That's what determines its gain. How big is its area that's doing the emitting? And then assuming that the rest of it has the right flare angle and the right kind of a antenna, a waveguide to coax adapter at the back end that's launching the signal into the horn itself, but those are the minor details that are very, very easily tunable for a person who's got a little bit of microwave smarts. But it's the mouth of the horn, not the length of the horn, that gives you the gain. I will admit that in order to make the horn work a little bit better and a little bit more broadband, you would like the flare angle to be more narrow, as opposed to a very wide flare angle, and that will give you a little bit more bandwidth, and inadvertently you end up with a little bit more length because of that. But the straight section of a horn, its length almost doesn't matter. So I strongly recommend, Tom, that you do a little bit more research on simple antennas, a ground plane-like antenna, maybe a 5/8 wave. It's going to be a tiny little thing, only a couple of inches long at 1,900 megs. But if you mount it high enough, altitude first is what makes a cell phone work well. If you put that antenna on the chimney of the house and run a piece of cable down into the cell phone, I think there's a 90% chance you're going to be very happy with the results. Altitude makes a huge improvement. The antenna that's inside the cell phone...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
The antenna that's in the cell phone itself is a really yucky antenna. The manufacturer of that cell phone thinks he is responding to what the American public wants to buy. And they want to buy a cell phone that's smaller and smaller and skinnier, and they're forcing everything into an extremely small size, so it's got a really yucky, tiny antenna. I mean, you saw Steve Jobs talking about the antenna that he got a big cheer out of people when he announced the fact that the metal rim around that particular cell phone, iPhone 3 or whatever the hell the thing was called, iPhone 4, that was the antenna, and everybody gave him a cheer because, boy, was this a real breakthrough. Ha! Your hand is wrapped around that piece of metal. And people eventually found out, until they put a piece of foam over the top of a gap in that metal, that the finger would kill the signal. And so, and that antenna, not only is it a tiny antenna packed into that package, and it's very poor in performance, that antenna is then slapped up against the side of your head, which is a great big RF microwave absorber. You make that antenna a real whip that sticks out from the cell phone, you'd have 10 dB more performance. You make it a yucky little coat hanger wire antenna, so to speak, on the chimney of your house, you'll be 20 decibels stronger, 100 to 1 ratio stronger because of altitude. Keep it simple. So try that first. And if that doesn't work, then consider the horn approach. The horn approach is, you know, jumping to a very elaborate approach that I don't think you need once you... And even that horn, by the way, is not going to work well unless it's got altitude. So now consider the fact that either you're going to mount a simple... Let me drop it. You're either going to mount a simple little ground plane antenna on the chimney of your house, or you're going to mount that great big 3-gallon can on the chimney of your house. I'll let you decide which one you'd rather do. And you've got to weatherproof that great big can also. Keep it simple. Make the antenna high. Give it a piece of good transmission line. And I think there's a 90% chance you're going to be very happy with the results, Tom. And by the way, when you do run these experiments, whether they be successful or unsuccessful, please come back and tell us what you found. And we'll give you some more hints if you know what I mean. WB2CLN, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, okay. All right, Dick. Maybe you get me to change my mind here. Maybe I'll go with a collinear vertical for cell phone, which should be omnidirectional. Maybe I'll make that and put it on a roof rather than this big popcorn can. And as far as the cell phone, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't see the antenna. I'm going to take the cell phone apart, I can link it, link it without taking it apart with just a quarter wave ground plane, can't I? Link couple like that. Just hold it next to the quarter wave ground plane. I'll do something like that then. But yeah, I know that these frequencies, height is everything. I'm well aware of it. And part two to the question, pretty much the same as I want to make a Wi-Fi antenna, which is 2400 megahertz. That has to be omnidirectional, so I can walk all over the place with my tablet. I guess the only thing there is a collinear vertical. Dick, go ahead.
Yeah, I sense, again, you're in a rural area, obvious by the fact that you think there's only one cell site that's going to cover you. And when it comes to running your tablet into a Wi-Fi system, that Wi-Fi system could be connected to the Internet by way of a radio link that you've established in your house. That's one approach. And depending on how you set up those links in the house, the antenna that's inside the tablet could be adequate, and maybe you don't need an external antenna. But if there's a way of putting an external antenna onto your tablet and you want to have wide coverage to some other hotspot other than one you establish in your house, then again, the antenna on the roof is the right approach. By the way, when it comes to the cell phone itself, coupling the signal from the cell phone into the transmission line that goes to the antenna on the roof, yes, there's various simple antennas you could wrap around the cell phone that can do that for you. However, a couple of the cell phones I've taken apart, let me drop. What I've discovered is that a number of the cell phones have a closed circuit jack connector on the printed circuit board of the cell phone when you remove the outer case. A number of them have that. It's a tiny little connector. It looks like a U.FL connector. It's a connector that's about an eighth of an inch, maybe 3/16 of an inch in diameter. And when you have the right kind of a connector on the end of the cable and you push it into that connector on the printed circuit board, it's a closed circuit jack which disconnects the real antenna and connects your piece of cable directly to the transmitter receiver of the cell phone. That's the way they tested at the factory. They tested with that little connector. So when you study your cell phone, if there's a way you can take it apart without damaging it, and you study the printed circuit